You want to learn something new? Yes, you do. Get 2 free months of Skillshare, the online learning community with thousands of amazing classes covering dozens of creative and entrepreneurial skills over at Skillshare.com/TOB. That's Skillshare.com/TOB. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to the show. This is Paul Coliani and I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about in this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. Okay, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here, and I wanted to address something today on the matter of thinking that there must be something wrong with you. I don't know if you've ever had this feeling. I used to have this feeling in my 20s and 30s and 40s, which I'm still in my 40s. So I've had this feeling throughout the decades. I'm assuming that most of us at one point have had this feeling. You know, I don't know about all of us, but maybe most of us have had the feeling that there must be something wrong with me. Maybe I'm not smart enough. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not worthy enough. Maybe I'm not lovable enough. Maybe why people fire me is because there's something wrong with me. Maybe because they leave me, there's something wrong with me. Maybe because they don't like me, there must be something wrong with me. And I'm here to tell you, there's good news. I'm here to tell you there's nothing wrong with you. That's not the entirety of the show. That's not where I'm going to end this. But I just want to get that out. There's nothing wrong with you. Even if you messed up, even if you made mistakes, even if you feel like you're the worst person on earth because you did X, Y, Z, and now you feel guilty, there's still nothing wrong with you. In fact, you are probably just like me. And I am probably just like you. You are probably just like people you hate and people you love. I hate to tell you that, but you're probably just like everyone else in some way, shape, or form. I'm not just like that person. I hear you, and I say the same thing. I'm quoting. You know, you might say something like that. You'll look at that person and go, there's no way I'm anything like that person. And in some ways, that's very true. In some ways, that's very false. And in a lot of ways, there's a gray area. But I'm not talking about behaviors. I'm talking about the thoughts and emotions that we deal with, the motivations behind the things that we do. I mean, a lot of us have the same motivation. A lot of us have the same feeling of wanting to get through a moment with the least suffering as possible. And some people twist it into other things. Some people twist it into doing bad things to good people. And they feel like that's the way to go because that's how they've learned to achieve comfort in their life or happiness or some sense of maybe survival. So a lot of us go through different phases and different stages and different levels of how to A, survive, B, feel comfortable, C, feel peace, and D, feel happiness, not saying it's that order or those words, but there's usually a step-up process to become more positive inside of ourselves. And some people, like I said, twist that. Some people hurt other people to feel more positive inside themselves. But we sort of have the same motivation behind all of our behavior. And so the reason I'm saying this, and I know there's exceptions that you could probably think of. There might be a few exceptions out there. And of course, you know, people that have neurological damage that might be an exception as well. But let's talk about the majority as far as when you look at someone else or you look at yourself and you think, I'm not good. I'm not worthy. I'm not lovable. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough for a bunch of stuff in my life. Or that person is better than me. How do we get into that trap? We see someone else and we think, whoa, they have more money. They have a better looking partner. They have a better looking family. They live on a better street. You know, all these thoughts that go through our head. And we think maybe we're less somehow. I received an email today, or not today. I received an email last year, a long time ago, that I'm reading today because I want to help you get over the hurdle of being mean to yourself. And this can happen. We can be mean to ourselves because we think we're not good enough, or we're not smart enough, or we're not, you know, like I said, all these other things. And when we do that, we put ourselves down, we insult ourselves, we offend ourselves. And then what happens is, because we feel this way, a small or a big part of us agrees with the insult. Oh, I'm not smart enough, or I'm too stupid for this. It's all this inner negative dialogue, and or sometimes verbal dialogue that we do to ourselves. And you say these things, and what ends up happening is that if there's a part of you that believes it, then you reinforce it. And so we get stuck reinforcing falsehoods about ourselves. So when you say something to insult yourself, offend yourself, or you believe it's true, and it's not an insult, it's not an offense, it's a reality, you think it's true, it's negative, but you think it's true, then you reinforce that as more truth, and it becomes more of a reality. And then you go through life basically brainwashing yourself. If you're brainwashing yourself like this, it's hard to get out of the pattern. It's hard to get out of that cycle. Because what ends up happening is that you don't find anyone to convince you otherwise because you have been brainwashed inside your own head 24 hours a day, or the time that you think about this stuff, which might be a lot. You just are always in the quagmire of negative thinking. And so you get to a point in life where you accept it as reality. And maybe you don't even have to think this stuff anymore. It just sinks in as a reality and a perception about yourself that you take with you and base all your decisions and behavior on this reality. It's an unreality. I'm here to say again, you are worthy, you are lovable, you are smart, you are all of the things that you have said opposite about yourself that are negative, if that makes sense. You are the wonderful person that makes mistakes. You are the amazing person that is capable of messing up. You are good and you end up doing bad things sometimes. Probably not intentionally, maybe intentionally. But we all mess up, so what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is if we have all these reinforced falsehoods that we're walking around with, then we don't necessarily have a way out of that negative thinking. And this pattern develops inside of us, and it's a record that plays over and over and over again, and we end up following this script, like rewatching the same movie over and over again, and it's playing the same scenes over and over again. So you know what this means. It just means that you have a negative feeling for the majority of the time. You don't feel good for the majority of the time. And if you don't feel good most of the time, then your life isn't as happy as it could be, isn't as fulfilling, and in fact, you may not enjoy life at all. So this starts usually early on. This starts usually with your parents or somebody that may have had good intentions, but someone with good intentions might do bad behavior, and they might say bad things to you. They might say things that make you feel bad about yourself. And that you take with you, and you don't have a good relationship with yourself and good relationship with others because you don't have any positive reinforcement. It's all negative reinforcement, especially when you're around dysfunctional people, you grew up in a dysfunctional family, or you had dysfunction of some sort. If there is addiction in your family, if there is anybody that was abusive or neglectful, there's all kinds of ways we can develop this negative reinforcement and carry around these beliefs of false things about ourselves. So we have to be careful what falsehoods we believe about ourselves. And we also have to say to ourselves, just like I said at the beginning of this little segment, that you are just like me and I am just like you. So when I look at you, I'm really no better or worse than you. And you're no better or worse than me. You may have done X, but I did Y. And I may have been homeless and you're wealthy, yet your relationship didn't turn out as great as mine. And, you know, not that you're trying to compare. I say don't compare, because that'll really make you feel bad, because all we end up doing is comparing ourselves to better, smarter, faster, more wealthy people. I mean, that's what we do, is we find out who's got more than us and what we want more of. We usually compare ourselves to those instead of comparing ourselves to those that are less worthy or less lucky or have less opportunity, have less options. Not saying we all do that, but we have a tendency to do that when we feel bad about ourselves. And it usually, when it comes to comparison, we usually compare ourselves to those that have what we want. And so, of course, that's going to make you feel bad, because there's always going to be somebody out there that has what you want. There's always going to be somebody out there that has more of something or a greater something. It's just the way it is. And if you are stuck in comparison, you will be stuck in life, because you spend so much time focused on what other people are doing, what other people are getting, how other people are living, that you forget to invest in yourself. And I think that is so important. If you invest your time and energy thinking about what other people are doing and what they're getting and how lucky they are, you forget to invest in yourself to make yourself lucky. What does that mean? That means luck isn't just something that appears. Luck takes work. Luck takes action. Luck happens when you take steps to make your life better. You can't look at somebody else and say they're so lucky. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't people out there with better opportunities. I'm not saying there aren't people out there that have more choices and had it easier. I'm not saying that that doesn't exist, but you have to remember that most people, they didn't have so much of their life handed to them, had to work for it in some way. I mean, this is, you know, I don't want to insult you or be patronizing. I know this is basic and obvious information, but some people think that that person over there has it better and is so fortunate and so lucky, but they don't see the rest of the iceberg that's underneath the water. They only see the tip. And they don't see the 20, 30, 40 years that was put into getting that lucky. And so this is just a philosophical thought process that you can have as you walk through life when you look at someone and you say, oh, they're so lucky. And I highly recommend, again, you don't compare, but especially don't compare yourself to those that stand out so much that there's no way you could ever get what they have. I mean, that sounds demotivational, I know, but don't look at a multi-billionaire. If you're not a billionaire, don't look at a multi-billionaire and say, oh, so lucky to be him. Because now you're comparing yourself to something that you probably will never, ever be able to accomplish. When I say that, that sounds so demotivational, but it is also a reality that if you come to accept it, if you come to realize that you can never be that person, then you stop focusing on that person, because you can never be it. You can never live on Venus. And if you spent your entire life thinking about how you can live on Venus, you will waste a lot of time. Well, what if we set up an environment on Venus where we can live? Well, that would be fantastic, but are you going to spend your entire life, unless you're an astrophysicist or somebody in the space program that is actually going to set something up here on Earth and then go to Venus and set it up there. Are you going to be that person? Are you ever going to be that billionaire? Are you ever going to be that model? Are you ever going to be any of these people that you might look at and feel some sense of, I'm not good enough? Because if you are, but you look at those people and you feel bad about yourself in some way, then I can guarantee you, by keeping your attention on those people, you'll never even come close, because you're not keeping your attention on yourself. You're not redirecting the focus where it needs to be, on you. Because the only way you'll get one millionth closer to what somebody else has created in their life, or even what somebody else has been handed in their life, the only way you'll get closer is if you take the time and energy and focus off of the person that maybe you're envious about, that maybe you feel jealous about, that maybe you just wish you were more like or had more of what they had. Taking the focus off of them and putting that focus on you, spending that time thinking about you and what you can do to take steps. What have you done and what haven't you done to take steps toward a more fulfilling life for yourself? Because I tell you what, I hear from a lot of people that write to me and say, I wish so-and-so would change. And they're not talking about themselves. They're talking about someone else. They're talking about a relationship they're in, or a family member, or some sort of dynamic that they want to change, either the person or the environment. They wish somebody else would just get it so that they themselves could have a better life of some sort, have some peace, have some happiness. And they are so focused outside themselves. No wonder they don't get what they want. No wonder they're not creating one iota of what they want in life, toward peace, toward comfort, toward happiness, if that's what they're going for. Because they spend so much time looking at them, looking at the other person, waiting for the other person, hoping for the other person to change. And they'll say things like, why can't they see what they're doing to me? And so I'm not putting those people down. I've been in that situation. I was married and I looked at my wife and I would say to her in my mind, why can't she see that what she's doing is hurting us? I almost said those exact words in my head. I didn't say it to her because I was more toxic back then. I used the silent treatment. I would withhold love. I would withhold affection. I would withhold my thoughts and I would treat her badly. I mean, I wasn't beating her, but I might as well have been. And that's a terrible thing to say, but I was beating her emotionally. I was a toxic person. And it was only near the end of our marriage where I started realizing how toxic I was and started changing. But by then, she fell out of love. And she had every right to. She should have fallen out of love, because when you verbally or emotionally beat someone like that, they're going to get jaded. They're going to feel so worn out that they'll have no love left. You drive the passion out of them when you are just waiting for them to do something for you instead of you looking inward and doing something for you. And I know that takes work. That takes work and it takes courage to be able to look inward and say, you know what? In order to get what I want in life, I have to stop focusing on other people to be who I want them to be. I have to. Because imagine if someone did that to me. If someone were waiting for me to change for them, that would be like someone saying to me, hey, look, I don't want you to be who you are. I don't want you to do what you'd normally do that makes you feel comfortable or happy. I want you to conform to my standards, my values, my criteria, so that I can be more comfortable in my life. Can you do that for me? If you say yes to that, even if it's nonverbal yes, just by being there and doing these things, changing yourself for someone else, I can guarantee you that you will get burnt out. That's what happens to people pleasers all the time. People pleasers get burnt out because they conform to the way the other person wants them to be. They conform to the standards that that other person sets. Instead of asking themselves, what do I really want? Or they may ask themselves that, but they don't follow that. They don't take action on that. They don't tell the other person, no, I don't want to do that. I would rather do this for me because this makes me happy. And if the other person says, well, no, that would make me unhappy and this relationship is over if you do that, then you still say, well, that's too bad because I'm here to support your happiness. I thought you were here to support mine. That's really the end of the conversation. I mean, I hate to break it down and make it so basic because I know it can be very complex to talk about this kind of stuff where you're not doing what I want you to do and you're making me upset. There is that. But if two people are in a relationship, anyone, a friendship, a work relationship, a romantic relationship, a family, when you're in that relationship, you can look at the other person and say, I support your path no matter what path you take. I hope you're walking the same path as I am, but if you're not, I still support it. That is a healthy perspective, but that also has to be reciprocated. I also support your path, the other person saying that to you. Whatever path you take, I support it. And the other person should also say that. I also support your path. And whatever steps you take, I support them. Hey, I may not agree with everything you do. I may not like what you do. But loving you is allowing you to be yourself. Loving you is supporting the path that you want to take. Loving you is the opposite of controlling you. I don't want to control you. I want you to be happy. And if you're taking steps to make yourself happy, I don't want to be the person to take you off that path. In fact, I want to be the person that supports that path so much that you feel free to do anything you want. Because when you do that, when you allow someone to do anything they want, I mean, within reason here, when you allow someone to follow their own path, follow their own journey that makes them happy, what usually ends up happening is that they don't get so absorbed in their path that they want to be by themselves. They feel so supported by you that they want to involve you, include you, and do whatever they can to be next to you and connected to you. And some relationships don't follow that rule. Some relationships follow the rule of follow my rules. Some relationships follow the control structure. I want to control you, follow my rules, and then we'll be happy. In reality, a relationship gets better when you allow someone to walk their own path and try not to control them and try not to manipulate them and try not to change them so that they don't feel free to be themselves. Because I come back to when you're focused on someone else to change for you, you end up burning them out. Just like I did with my wife when I was married, I ended up burning her out. She was starting to get depressed. She lost all of her passion for the world. And I thought it was her. I thought, what is she going through? What's her problem? And like I said, near the end of our relationship, I started having these realizations and I started taking responsibility for the destruction that I was causing in my relationship. And I finally backed off. I finally said, you know what? If that's her path, I can either choose to walk with her on that path and support her, at least the steps that she is choosing to take, or I can work against her and make this difficult for both of us. And again, it's reciprocal. She was very reciprocal. She always supported me. So I mistreated her. And, you know, I'm not proud of that. I don't like saying that. It feels awful. But I've learned so much, and I know she's happier now. And she's in a better relationship. And I am fully supportive of that. I am so glad. It sounds weird. I'm so glad she left me. And that's the opposite of how I felt when it was happening. But it was the best thing for both of us. And sometimes that's the best way to heal. Sometimes you need to be away from each other, no matter who it is, just to heal, just to reflect back on yourself, back in yourself, and reconnect to yourself. So that you know who you are, you know what you want, and you follow that path, and then you surround yourself with people that also support who you are and what you want. Not everyone's going to agree. Not everyone's going to say, oh, I love that you're doing that. I want to be involved. That's not going to happen. But the people that support you doing what you want with your life are the best type of people to surround yourself with. Doesn't mean you can't have friends and partners and family that disagrees with you, because people can disagree and still love each other, just as long as they're not trying to change each other. And that's when things get hairy. So how does this all come back to negative self-talk and not feeling like you're good enough or smart enough or attractive enough or whatever? It's all a matter of self-focus. It's all a matter of redirecting your focus off of other people and putting it on yourself. Because I guarantee you, life is a lot different when you don't look at that person over there and put yourself down for not being like that person or having what that person has. Life is so much different when you take your time and attention off of them and you stop obsessing. I mean, this is the cure to obsession, is to stop thinking about other people so much. You continue thinking about other people so much, you put no time and energy into yourself, you can't heal. You can't. You can't get out of that false reality that you've created in yourself, that you're not good enough, that you're not whatever. And when you're in that false reality and that pattern continues, it's hard to get out of the pattern. So let's talk about that a little bit more. When I come back, I'm going to read you an email, just snippets of an email that are very important to understand how all this fits together, or at least some of this fits together. It's a big topic, but I want to talk about it some more. Be right back after this. Okay, I've got 2 months of free classes for you. I'm just going to start off this little sponsor segment with that. So I want you to listen how to get these classes. And it's such a diverse series of classes. It's going to raise your education and maybe even your income. So keep listening. Today's sponsor is Skillshare. I've heard their name for many, many years, but I never thought twice about them. And I hate to say that because they're a sponsor and I want to make sure that, you know, they're not upset I said that, but I really didn't know what they had to offer until I looked into them, until I signed up and found out what they had. And I want you to do the same thing. And the reason is because they offer these online courses, or an online learning community with thousands of amazing classes covering dozens of creative and entrepreneurial skills. And the classes are all high quality and they're all very educational. I'm going to read you a few of the ones that I've seen on here that surprised me. It's a huge variety. If you're a creative, if you're an entrepreneur, if you want to learn how to design your interior, there's interior design classes. There's all kinds of online classes in here that will increase your intelligence and give you new ideas and take you to new places. And this is important because there are people that write to me and say, you know what? I don't have enough money. I don't have enough skill. I don't have enough training in what I want to do with my life. And all of these classes that I'm looking at right now on my screen are all stepping stones to increasing all of the above. Your learning, your income, your reach. I mean, with this show, for example, it's a creative endeavor that I took to create the Overwhelmed Brain. And I'm wondering, I'm just going to look it up right now. I'm wondering if there is a class on podcasting. Let's take a look. Okay, probably dozens. There's a lot of training on podcasting. So I didn't know about this when I was starting to podcast. And yet here are all these classes on podcasting. So that's awesome. I mean, they have everything from editing photos and photography classes. They have, what's this one? Modern Money Habits. They have learning to illustrate in your graphics program. They have interior design, video editing, how to make films. Here's one, how to find your natural voice. If you can think of it, it's probably in here. You can take classes in everything from photography to creative writing to design, productivity, and more. So whether you're returning to a long-time passion project, or you're challenging yourself to get out of your comfort zone, or simply exploring something new, Skillshare has the classes for you. Like, I found a class on Instagram. I'm just starting to use Instagram, and I thought, I wish I knew how to use Instagram. So I'm in Skillshare, and I looked up Instagram, and of course, there are so many courses on Instagram. And that's just one little tiny topic in a sea of thousands. So I want you to check this out, and I want you to be happily surprised, not only by the subjects that they cover, but also because as a listener of this show, you get 2 free months. 2 free months. So you can just go in there and just take all the classes you want for 2 months. And I want you to continue using this month after month after year after year, because what they do is continue adding classes and continue to help you improve yourself. You get what I can see almost everything you need on this one site. Get the 2 free months. Go to Skillshare.com/TOB. That's Skillshare.com/TOB. 2 free months of unlimited access to thousands of classes. Skillshare.com/TOB. Welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to read you snippets of an email and talk about some of the stuff that we talked about in the last segment so that we can get an idea of how to change some of the negative patterns that are going on inside of us. You know, if you're walking around with these negative patterns, if not, you're probably not listening to the show anyway, but there's probably something in there that could change. If you've gotten this far in this episode, you're probably thinking, okay, you know, there's probably something I could change in there. There's something negative that I'm holding on to. So I'm going to read these snippets and make comments as I go. This person, I'm going to call her Jane. And Jane says, like I said, there's little snippets here, so I'm going to read them out of context. She said, I want to release seeing myself as, quote, less than, not showing my true self in front of others. So what she's saying is that I want to feel more than. I want to feel, you know, what's the opposite of less than? I want to feel more than. Or at least I want to feel like I can be myself. That's what she's saying. I want to show my true self in front of others. Well, Jane, this is going to be something that I repeat probably several times throughout this segment. And that is this. Most people you meet are going to feel less than in many ways to other people. Not everyone. Some people are, their egos are pretty healthy or inflated. And some people are really extroverted and they're just confident in themselves. But there's a majority of people, I would say a majority, that feels a little less like themselves around most people. I don't feel like myself around most people, meaning I don't feel like I can truly show every part of me to anyone I meet. And let me ask anyone listening now, do you feel like you can show any and every part of you to someone you meet? Would you show your romantic side to that stranger in the grocery store that you're not attracted to? You probably wouldn't. You probably wouldn't show every part of you, your authentic self, to everyone you meet. Well, Paul, I'm not talking about that. I know you're not talking about that. I'm just wanting you to be aware that there's a lot of components about ourselves that we won't show to other people. You might get giddy watching cartoons, but you don't want to tell that person that you get giddy watching cartoons. You might like toilet humor, but you don't want to tell that person you like toilet humor because they don't seem like they would get that in you. Or you might think it's repelling to them. Or maybe you have some strange habit that you don't want to tell other people about. Maybe you're just socially awkward and you know it and you get anxiety around people. There's a lot of things that might be going on inside of you that you don't want to show other people. There's a lot of things that I don't show other people. I come on the air and I feel confident. I can talk to people and I can come up with stuff really on the fly as I talk. But when I'm in public and I'm in just regular conversation and I'm accessing my own emotions and I'm really getting internal and I'm talking about my own stuff, I can have a tendency to sometimes not come up with the stuff I would normally say on the air. Meaning, let's just say I'm going through something that is painful or is bothering me, I might not be able to remember the tools that I talked about on the show. I made up some of these tools or a lot of these tools. I made these up and I still can't pop them out when I'm in the moment because I'm in the moment. And so this is what happens as we go around in life, in our own stuff, in our moments, and we can't really access all the resources that we might have inside of us in that moment, even though we know they're there. Because with so-and-so, those resources are easy to access, but with this person, they're not. We tend to change who we are because we just are in different environments, and the different people create different interactions, causing us to access different areas of our brain or whatever the science is, and suddenly we're not the level of authenticity that we want to be. Because I tell you what, there are some people that I have no problem standing up to. I have no problem honoring myself. And then there are other people I would rather not. Doesn't mean I can't, but I'd rather not. So I might be a little awkward around them. I might be a little less myself around them. And I know what Jane's saying. Jane's talking about the insecurities that she carries around. Jane, there's a lot of people that carry around insecurities just like you. I would say the majority of a room that you walk into where most people don't know each other and most people aren't comfortable sharing who they are with each other are going to have all these insecurities. But what happens, especially with people that have social anxiety in situations like this, is that they really believe, or most of them will believe, that they're isolated in this feeling, that there's hardly anybody or no one in the room that feels the way they do. And I got to tell you, that is almost always false. This is another falsehood that we've made a reality in our lives, is that we believe that somebody else isn't feeling or thinking what we're feeling and thinking. This is why one of my anti-anxiety tools is when I feel anxious, to tell someone that I'm feeling anxious and get it out there. Put it out in the room on the table. Even if I am a speaker, put it out there and say, I can't believe this. I'm feeling anxious in this room. And what that does is helps me connect with other people that might have some sort of insecurity or even anxiety inside of them. I did this in a room once because I couldn't stand holding on to it. I like to walk around in life not holding on to negativity. So I get it out of me. It's like I reach inside with my hand and pull out the negativity and put it on the table and show people what's going on inside of me. That's called vulnerability. Pull it out, show people what's going on inside of you, something that you fear, something you feel awkward about, something that you feel uncomfortable about, something that you're embarrassed by, feel ashamed by, feel guilty about. Pull it out. I pull it out. I put it on the table, and I don't care if I'm judged. I just want it out of me. Because once it's out of me, people can do whatever they're going to do with it. People can say whatever they're going to say about it, but at least it's out of me. And guess what? I am allowing myself to be more authentic. I am accessing that authenticity. Because that authenticity gives me the path to my true self. I mean, that's close to the definition of authenticity, but what I'm trying to say is when you are able to get the negativity out of you and put it in front of you to be expressed, to share with someone else, you are allowed to be more authentically you. You are allowed to show your true self. I'm not saying you have to or that you will, but you have the option. You have the opportunity to do so because you're not hiding it. I think a lot of anxiety and insecurity comes from hiding what's going on inside of you. I don't want anyone to know. Let people know. See what happens. I've tried this over and over again. I wait for the judgment and it never happens. Because I notice that most judgment comes when you're hiding something and holding it in. Instead of just putting it out there saying, yep, that's me. Yep, I did that. Yep, I'm this way. You might still be judged, but it won't be the kind of judgment that you fear so much that you walk around in anxiety. Because the anxiety comes from hiding. The insecurity comes from hiding. You spend so much time hiding from other people because you don't want to be discovered. You don't want to let that vulnerability show to anyone because you're always in fear of being attacked or criticized or judged. And in reality, most of the time you're not. I mean, unless you're doing something that is opposing the values of a majority, if you're the only pro-choice person in a pro-life rally, you'll probably be judged. You'll probably be criticized. But that's a hot button issue. And I think the problem is we treat a lot of what's going on inside of us as hot button issues. Oh, that's a hot button issue. I can't talk about that. Oh, I got abused in my past. I can't talk about that. But what happens is we don't realize that a lot of people have experienced in some way, shape, or form the same stuff that we've experienced growing up. There are hardly any perfect childhoods. And so a lot of us go around hiding this stuff, holding it in, and we can't be truly authentic. And yes, it's scary. Yes, it takes steps to grow and heal through that stuff. But I tell you what, healing favors the bold. And when you take bold steps, like reaching in and putting what's inside you on the table to be examined, to be judged, to be criticized, not that that would happen, but just to do it anyway, you find that your life changes. You pick your battles, of course. You don't put your stuff in front of volatile people. You don't put it in front of your narcissistic mom or dad or partner. You don't do that. You keep that kind of stuff away from really volatile people. But you don't treat everyone as volatile. You don't make something up that they may be volatile. You have to look at their patterns. Have they ever been volatile? Are they usually volatile or aggressive or criticizing or judgmental? Because if they have been, then maybe, you know, you take a bigger chance there. But for the most part, people that haven't had that pattern, they're usually the safe ones. They're usually the ones that are going to understand. And of course, that's why therapists are here. That's why coaches like myself are here. We provide a safe space for you to be yourself. And it helps to find that safe space first before you try it on everyone in your immediate vicinity. And of course, you know, I have the safe system for anxiety. Go to quietbegins.com if you are dealing with social anxiety. That's not what this episode's about, but I wanted to let you know about that because it's a huge help for anxiety sufferers. But my point is, when you feel isolated, when you feel alone in your struggle, in your stuff, emotional triggers and such, most of the time you're not. You're not alone. We just have to remember that the insecurity and the fear comes from trying to hide it from others, at least most of it. I know there's other reasons we do that, but most of it is trying to hide what's inside of us from others. And I've come to the point where I say, you know what? I'm done hiding. I think that's a great attitude to have. I'm done hiding. You know what? Here's what I've done. Here's what I've done in my past. Here's how I feel. Here's the emotional state I'm in right now. Boom, on the table. Do what you want with it. Again, not easy. It was a step-by-step process. It does take some healing, but healing does favor the bold. All right, I'm going to read you another snippet of this email. Jane says, I feel sometimes like I may ignore my difficult emotions and keep carrying on with whatever I'm doing, and it's become a habit. Jane, another thing I'm going to repeat probably several times is we all do this. We all do this. I'm going to repeat what you said. I feel sometimes like I may ignore my difficult emotions and keep carrying on with whatever I'm doing, and it's become a habit. Yes, I mean, there are stuff that we might carry around, and it comes up, and then we go, oh, I can't deal with this right now, and then we stuff it back down. We don't want to deal with it all the time. Sometimes this stuff is going to have to be stuffed back down because we're in the moment. I mean, that sounds awful. I don't mean that you should stuff your emotions down. I mean that sometimes in some situations, maybe you're in a job interview and you're having some emotional trigger. It's probably not the best time for your stuff to come up. So you're going to stuff them back down and then go cry in the car. I hope you've heard my episodes on doing job interviews. There's ways around that. But the point is, sometimes we have to do that. Sometimes we have to ignore our difficult emotions and keep carrying on because that's how we carry on. Sometimes they're tough to deal with. So I get it. Now, what you're saying is that it's a habit. I always do it. So that's what needs to change. We do need to change that habit. You know, this is the kind of show that I talk about changing habits. I just don't call it changing habits. I call it changing patterns. I call it addressing those patterns by healing, by finding out what the obstacles are in our life and trying to overcome them by doing what? By taking steps. And what steps do we take? It usually requires the big step of honoring yourself. And in order to honor yourself, you have to focus on yourself and not other people, not what they're going to do, not what they're going to say, but what you need to do for you. That's self-love. That's self-compassion. That's self-care. You ask yourself, what do I need to do for me? And then your fear comes up. Yeah, but so-and-so will say this. So-and-so will do this. They'll leave me. They'll yell at me. They'll fire me. They'll disown me. They'll discredit me. They'll tell everyone how bad I am. Yeah, whatever. I know it's awful, but what do you need to do for you? Because the more you focus on that, the more you direct all your time, effort, and energy into what you need to do for you, the less that matters on the outside world. In fact, what ends up happening is that healthy people respect, admire, and are attracted to people that are into self-care. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And unhealthy people, and I mean that very loosely, because there are some people that are very healthy, but they have toxic ways, they have a bad behavior, they're very pessimistic, or even all that stuff's not bad, but little things that can really ruin our day when they criticize, when they judge. Some people aren't necessarily on our side, not because they don't love us, not because they don't care, but because they have their own fears. They have the fear of us changing, because if we change, they feel like they have to change in order to stay connected to us. And they don't want to change, some people. They don't want to change, so they want us to change, but only the way they want us to be, which I've talked about earlier. And so what ends up happening is that the people that support you most, that love you in the most healthy, unconditional way, they're the ones that love seeing you take care of yourself. They love it. Oh my God, you're taking care of yourself. That means you'll be happier. That means you'll be more comfortable. That means you'll get more of what you want in life. And then they'll support you doing that. And you'll want those people in your life forever. And it'll feel so good having those types of people around, because when you get healthier, when you heal emotionally or whatever's going on inside of you, you'll realize who feels oppressive and who feels supportive. And what that means is that you might lose people in your life. You might lose people that you thought you could be friends with, or you thought you could be lovers with, or you thought you could be family with, but it turns out they're not really there to support your happiness. They're there to control what goes on in their life and make sure that the people around them show up in a certain way so that they don't have to adapt, so that they don't have to change, so that they don't have to live and let live and love and let go. And when they don't have to do that, the opposite of love is control, and they end up being the controllers in your life. And sometimes you find out who the controllers in your life are when you do any type of self-improvement. You find out, because what they'll do is say, "I am so happy for you." Those are the lovers. The controllers are going to say, "I can't believe you're doing that. Why would you do that? How could you do that?" They might even say things like, "I can't believe you're so selfish. You're not thinking of us. You're not thinking of me. You're only thinking of yourself." And then you can go, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's good, right? They're going to say, "No, it's not good." Except they'll say it in a much meaner way. Hopefully not. I'm embellishing a little. I hope that's okay. And I hope it's not true in your life. But sometimes it is. Sometimes these people show up in this exaggerated way. And you're like, "Whoa, I thought you were my friend. I thought you cared about me." And then you find out who these people are. And it hurts, but sometimes you have to let them go. Sometimes you do. Hopefully you don't. Hopefully you can convince them by just being happier, and they see that you're happier, and they finally back off and go, "Whoa, I didn't realize that you were so happy. I really support that. I like that. I guess I should not have given you a hard time. You're on a good path, and I really like to see you happy. That's all I really ever wanted." Hey, that's great. That would be terrific. All right, let me continue this email. She goes on to say, "I want to show people my true self without anxiety, without holding back. I am funny and silly, and I'm passionate about what I do. Yet there's a voice in my head sometimes that seems to have been with me for so long, I'm sick of it and I'm done with it. It's a voice that doubts me. It makes me not believe in myself and be scared sometimes. Sometimes it says I'm not good enough, and that, quote, not good enough story leaks into other parts of my life, and I'm not being my true self, even with my partner." Yes, that's absolutely true. The beliefs that you have about yourself, these falsehoods that we end up making a reality, do bleed into the other parts of our life. If you think you're not good enough in this one area, it's going to go across the spectrum and make you think that you're not good enough for almost anything. And I believe a healthier perspective is to know that you're not good enough here and you're great there. Again, that sounds demotivating. I'm not good enough there. Oh, but you're great there. This is a healthy perspective of your strengths and your weaknesses. And really, not good enough, the term not good enough, is not a good way to say it. I'm not good enough. That's just an unhealthy way to look at yourself. You can say, I need more help in this area. I need more education in this area. I need to work on this area. But I don't like the term, I'm not good enough. For one, when will you know when you're good enough? That's a question that, you know, it's hard to answer when you're stuck saying, I'm not good enough. When will you know it? I mean, I love that question, actually. When will you know you're good enough? When will you know? What's your criteria? I mean, a lot of people can't answer that when they say, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. When will you know you're smart enough? When will you know? Remember that question. When will I know? Because I'm going to say right now, I bet you the majority of people who say that to themselves don't have a criteria to know when that is. And what that does is keep them in the not good enough status always, indefinitely. And if you don't have a finish line, a tangible goal that you can say, at this point, I will absolutely be good enough, then you'll always be not good enough. And so this is toxic thinking. This is obsessive toxic thinking that gets you nowhere because you have no qualifier to say when I'm good enough or when I'm smart enough or when I'm wealthy enough. You don't have the qualifier. So I like to use the term, I'm still working on it and I'm going to continue working on it. You know, I need help here. I need assistance here. I need to make more money. I need to get more education. But I'm going to throw myself off that track because I'm going to say, well, I said more. How do I qualify more? When is more enough? I need more money. What is enough money? You know, qualify it. Give yourself a data point to reach. Well, I need to make $2,000 a month to survive, and I need to make $3,000 a month to live comfortably. You know, put some hard numbers on your chart, on your spreadsheet, so that you have a goal, so that you have some sort of direction, instead of just saying, well, I need more. Because you're probably going to get more of something, but it's never going to be enough because you don't have the finish line laid out. You just know you need more or you want more. So what qualifies as more? What qualifies as enough? You got to watch out for those words. More, there's not enough. Or how about many? I need many of something. Well, what meets your criteria? What is your criteria? Don't get yourself stuck in these vague concepts like I don't have enough money or my finances are too low. Again, it's a vague concept. What qualifies as enough? What qualifies as too high? Well, it's never too high. What qualifies as perfect? I'm not saying you have to come up with these numbers, but if you're stuck in this loop of vague thinking like this, you end up stuck in the loop indefinitely. So this is just something I want you to practice. If you have some sort of vague concept of I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, or I'm too much of this or too little of that, find out what qualifies as middle of the road or perfect or enough. What qualifies as that so that you have something to shoot toward? Because if you're listening to this episode, you've heard me say, when you start focusing on yourself and you take bold steps toward healing, toward moving in a direction instead of focusing on other people, then you'll meet your criteria or at least get one step closer instead of these infinite loops that we put ourselves in. All right, let me get to the next part of this email. I'd really like a more solid base of confidence, the ability to speak freely and be truly authentic, compassionate, loving, and the goofy me that I am when I am stress and anxiety free. All right, so she used the word more. I'd really like a more solid base of confidence. And I would ask the question, okay, at what point will you have a solid base of confidence? You may not know what that looks like, and that's the problem. You need to know what a solid base of confidence looks like, and that might mean you have to visit times in your life where you wanted or needed confidence, but you didn't have it, and then define what it would look like to be confident in those moments. And so this leads to two questions that I have to credit Tad James for, of NLP trainer. He asked the questions, what's present that's usually missing when you're stress and anxiety free? That's the first question. I'm going to read it again because the next one is kind of tricky. The first one is, what's present that's usually missing when you're stress and anxiety free? You might have to put this on pause and figure that one out because the next one kind of twists your brain. The next one is, what's missing that's usually present when you're stress and anxiety free? And you can't use the answer stress or anxiety. You can't say, well, stress is missing. No, you have to really think about those questions. Because what it's asking isn't just the practical stuff. Well, people are missing when I'm feeling good. That's a very practical answer, but you have to dive a little deeper. What else is inside you that's missing or present? And you ask yourself in that way. And that can be very helpful. That's going to help you find why you get stress and anxiety. It doesn't necessarily resolve the stress and anxiety, but it really helps you connect with it. And again, solidify your understanding of why it happens, or at least get closer to solidifying it. All right, she goes on to say, I want to feel good enough always. Again, we need to define what good enough means. And I need help letting this go. I really do. I've been reading up a lot, but your podcast has really given me some good insights. I do feel some anger toward my dad and what happened in my past. My whole life until recently, I blamed my dad in a way for what happened. I thought that if he had just got his life together a bit more, he would have still been in my life. He was a really kind man that cared, but I rarely saw him. This hurt for years and left me depressed sometimes. I have discovered compassion throughout the years, for his childhood was difficult, although no excuse, but it helps me understand him better. But I feel distant with him too. I want to show more love to everyone. All right, I'm going to stop right there and let's talk about your dad. You know, the many years that I spent in childhood with my stepfather, who was an alcoholic, who was abusive, not necessarily toward me, but very scary, very aggressive, and he would throw lots of things. He would punch holes in the wall, kick holes in the wall. Growing up with that as a child, thinking that was normal, first of all, but also creating all kinds of survival mechanisms and coping mechanisms, I left my childhood pretty scarred. I left with all these strange beliefs about relationships, about the world, and I ruined a lot of my relationships. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s and then 40s that I started healing from what happened in my childhood. And a lot of us will do that. We'll have some sort of dysfunctional upbringing or toxic upbringing, and then we have to heal from it many, many years later because we realize how much it's screwing up our lives. So we need to fix this stuff, or at least process it and hopefully release it so that it doesn't screw up the things we want anymore. We get very stuck in old thinking and old perceptions and old belief systems that we ruin a lot of good things in our life. I mean, it can happen. I'm not saying it happens to everyone, but that's what happened to me. So she's talking about how her father was a certain way. He did certain things and she had some anger about it. And so what I did in my childhood was I was very forgiving for my stepfather. I was very forgiving. Even after I left home when I was like 19 or 20, I held this forgiving perception toward him. And I tell you what, that was a mistake. I know you might be surprised to hear me say that, but it was a mistake. And the reason was, it was because I didn't truly forgive him. And I didn't feel positive about him at all. I kept negativity. I kept anger. I kept holding on to this stuff because I really believed you were supposed to be forgiving. And this really messed with my head and it messed with my relationships and it kept me doing toxic behavior because I held on to the idea that you're supposed to be forgiving. And that goes against a lot of people's beliefs. You're supposed to be forgiving. I'm not saying you're not supposed to be forgiving. I'm saying if you have something that you haven't processed yet and you still forgive and that processing hasn't taken place, you end up holding on to dysfunction. You end up becoming more destructive in your own life because this negativity comes out in other ways. So we forgive that person over there, but we haven't let it go. And part of forgiveness is letting go. But if you really don't forgive that person, then don't get into a forgiving state. Because what needs to happen first, in my opinion, is you need to express what's really going on inside of you. Take out the forgiveness part just for a moment. And if there's not forgiveness, what is in there? Because when you reach inside and pull out what's in there and you look at it, what does it look like? What does it feel like? What is it? For me, it was hatred. I was like, what? Hatred? Hatred is in there. How could hatred be in there? That's awful. I don't want to hate. I don't want to hold on to that. I don't want to hold on to hatred. I want to get rid of that, so I'll be forgiving. And that doesn't work. You can't hold on to both. I mean, forgiveness works, but it doesn't work when you hold on to both. When you hold on to both hatred and forgiveness, or anger and forgiveness, you're not forgiving at all. And I'm not saying that forgiveness eradicates this. I say take forgiveness out of the picture, at least for step one. Take it out and address the negativity, address the anger, address what I had to address, the hatred. You may not feel that, but I did, and I didn't know I felt it because I was covering the emotions. It was a denial. It was a forgiveness denial. I just made that up. I don't know if it's real, but I was denying that I was actually not forgiving. I was not letting this go. I was holding on. And this is why it's so hard for some people to forgive, because they still have it inside them. So you know what? Take out the forgiveness equation, put it aside, throw it away if that's what you feel for now. It'll come back, I promise. Because what ends up happening is that when you address the reality, the real feelings, the real emotions, the real thoughts that you have, and you allow those to come up and out of you, and you see them for what they are, and you finally acknowledge what's going on inside of you. You might have to talk to a professional. That's fine too. But you bring it out. Stop stuffing it down. Stop denying that's what you really feel. I was denying that I had hatred. I never realized I had hatred. I didn't know it was in there until I took the forgiveness out. And then the hatred came up and I said, oh, that's there. And I cried. I literally fell to my knees and I cried. And I think I screamed too. It's kind of embarrassing, but I did. I screamed and cried. I said, I hate him. I hate him so much. It had to come out. Oh my God, all that energy from all those years had to come out. And when it did, whoa, forgiveness was there all by itself. And I believe that's how it works. That's why forgiveness is all about you. And with Jane's letter here, when she's able to get into the space of what feelings that she has toward her father, even though her father was a kind person, you know, my stepfather was a very kind person when he wasn't drunk. But there are times when he was awful, really awful. But it isn't about seeing all those kind times and compassionate moments and caring moments. It's about addressing what you're holding on to. And if you're holding on to some anger toward this kind person, you have to bring it up. You have to address it. You have to process it. You have to look at it. You have to acknowledge it. You have to validate yourself. Yes, this is what I feel. I don't care if it's wrong. This is what I feel. You bring it up. And this starts the process of healing. And forgiveness comes by itself. I'm really not a fan of forgiveness being a manual process. Like you have to forgive. Like you have to bring that in there and say the words or say them to yourself or bring it into your reality because it's forced. I don't like when forgiveness is forced. I like when it happens all on its own. And I believe that's a good way to do it. So let me read the last couple things and we'll finish up. She goes on to say, I had a lot of problems in my past and I feel so sad for my past self. I treated myself with such little love sometimes, beating myself up inside, not knowing how to stop. So right there, that's all about your inner child. You know, you've heard about the inner child. What is the inner child? The inner child is what you're holding on to, all the negativity, all the positivity too, but when you get angry, when you become sad, when you have a tantrum, when you have a fit, it's the inner child's needs not met. And so it's nice to acknowledge and validate the child inside of you. If that doesn't make any sense, all you need to do is remember yourself as a child and what needs weren't met. Just do that. When I think about that, I think of my like 7 or 8 year old self or maybe 10 year old self. I see myself with that bowl cut, with that really bright blonde hair and that bowl haircut. And I acknowledge him and I see him there and realize what he's missing because that was me. That is me. And I try to give him what he's missing. Hey, what do you need? Hey, what are you afraid of? Is there anything I can do for you? I just show up and I'm there. And some days I might need a hug. Some days I don't. Some days I just need someone to talk to Some days my inner child wants to be in my presence, but not necessarily need anything else, just to know I'm there. And sometimes we have to do that for ourselves. That's all you're really doing. That's self-care, self-compassion, self-love. So for Jane, you know, she treated herself with such little love sometimes. Well, when you were a kid, you didn't know how to love yourself, especially if you weren't taught. So you can't really blame yourself for that, because none of us really had all the resources that we needed. Otherwise, we wouldn't be into self-improvement. We'd just be okay. But you don't have all the resources back then. We don't even have all the tools that we need now. We develop them as we go along. We realize, oh, that's what I need to do. We're still learning. We're always learning. But when you're on Earth for 10 years, or however old you were, you're not even fully conscious yet. You're still experimenting. You're still experiencing the world from this child's perspective. So of course, you're not going to treat yourself very well. You're just going to go out and have fun and mess around and figure stuff out and cry and cause trouble and be a little hellion sometimes. It just happens. That's what kids do. So when you beat yourself up as a kid, that's not something that you did purposefully because you were born that way. That's something that you learn to do. Because when you beat yourself up, especially when there's a lot of negative inner dialogue, it's usually not in your own voice. You're usually not born thinking, I'm not good enough. In fact, I know you weren't. You weren't born thinking that. Someone instilled that into you. We get our self-worth usually from our closest caretakers, usually our parents. And if they're not good at giving love and helping you realize your worth, then you feel worthless or less worth throughout life. You feel less lovable. And yeah, they probably screwed up. They don't even know they did it. They didn't do it right. They didn't know how. A lot of people have a kid and they go, what do we do with this? It doesn't mean you're not lovable. It just means they weren't ready or they don't know how. Or they were just incapable or grew up in toxic homes. All of that. All of the above. And how much therapy or self-help did your parents go through? Because if they didn't, then they were trying to figure it out all on their own. It can be done. It's not easy. That's why we need each other. That's why we have community. That's why we have social circles. We all help each other in different ways. Hey, can I run something by you? Sure, run it by me. And then we get input. It's helpful. So I understand, Jane, that you might be beating yourself up, or at least you used to, and you didn't know how to stop, but here you are, ready to hug yourself. You know, so we all go through the ebb and flow of not loving ourselves enough, not caring for ourselves, not being kind to ourselves. And now we can be. If you continue being unkind to yourself, that's a problem. You got to change it. But if you did it in the past, well, change it now. Be kind to yourself. And then listen to my episodes on overcoming guilt, because that might be what you're holding on to. Anyway, Jane, I'm going to finish this up with something that you said that was really great to read. I didn't expect this, but you ended your message with this. I feel like I wasted so much time not feeling good enough. I released this. I am done with this story. It's just a story and nothing more. I am just as good as everyone else. I better myself daily. I am done with not believing in myself. I am done with holding on to the past with my dad, and I'm truly letting go and forgiving him. I am done with holding on to the past. Excellent, Jane. Thank you so much for sharing this. I am so glad to read this final statement. I saw it right before I started the show. I was like, oh, it ends on a good note. There wasn't even a question in this. It's just an email with a lot of lessons, a lot of learnings. And I wrote to Jane just today and said, hey, you know, how's it going? What's up? Are you still in this better state? Are things going well? And I told her that this was airing today. So hopefully she's listening to it. But I hope to get an update. So if you're listening, Jane, thank you so much for sharing this. And thank you for listening to this episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. We're really pushing the time here. So I'm going to get right to the closing thank yous and goodbyes right after this. And my final words, talk to you in a moment. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to remind you of those 2 months you can get at Skillshare. Online courses, all kinds of subject matters. Head over to Skillshare.com/TOB. 2 free months, nothing to lose. And I want to thank Anna. She generously donated. I appreciate you, Anna. She made a one-time donation over at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And there you can join the patron program if you want, or make a one-time donation to the show. Yes, we operate on donations, not only donations. We also operate on sponsorships. And any income that comes our way is all a way to help pay for what goes on over here. So if you get value from this show and you want to show your support, head over to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and click on Become a Patron at the top of the screen. That doesn't mean you have to become a patron, but that's just where the options are to donate or become a member. So thank you, Anna, and thank you anyone that's in the patron program. I appreciate you. This is how we do it. Thank you so much. You are a major part of this show, and I appreciate you. And I told you about the SAFE system for anxiety over at quietbegins.com. That is a powerful system to help you alleviate your anxious feelings and thoughts, especially while they're happening. Because a SAFE system includes what I call E-pods, emergency pods. And those will walk you through and out of anxiety while it's starting. So you might have to take your phone or your little MP3 player into the bathroom or someplace quiet just for a few minutes and get help in your ears, walking you through and out of anxiety. It's over at quietbegins.com. If you're dealing with any type of anxiety, the SAFE empowerment system can be of great help to you. And just a quick mention of my podcast, Love and Abuse. If you're in any type of difficult relationship and you want to learn how to communicate in a better way, in a more healthy way, instead of a toxic way, head over to loveandabuse.com. I've had that podcast since February of 2019, and I've been getting a lot of good feedback on it because people are learning about unhealthy communication. I think that's so important to do. Loveandabuse.com teaches you about unhealthy communication, and it's not just for emotionally abusive relationships. It's for everyone, because I think all of the information on that show is relevant and important, because you probably know someone who communicates in an unhealthy way. Loveandabuse.com. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. Wow, a lot of .coms today. Sorry about that. But there's so many good resources out there. Just like today, I talked about a lot of different subject matters. Most of it was along the lines of, there must be something wrong with me. That's how I started the show. There must be something wrong with me. So I'm going to complete the show and talk about that for a moment. Again, there's nothing wrong with you. Nothing. What ends up happening is that we carry around these negative beliefs, these falsehoods that we've created that were usually installed into us, like somebody putting a disc in a computer. I don't know if you remember those days when we put discs in computers and loading a program and saying, okay, from this point forward, you're going to think this way. You're going to believe this way. You're going to feel this way because I've installed it into you. It's usually somebody else's doings. They did something to you. And when you realize that somebody did something to you, whether intentionally or not intentionally, whether consciously or unconsciously, you have to give yourself a break and make sure that you realize that we started off as a blank slate. We were a computer when we started off. That's such a cold picture to paint. But a computer has no instructions to run anything. As soon as you put instructions into it, it knows what to do. You're going to tell the computer, hey, I want you to be a word processor. Hey, I want you to have access to the internet. Hey, I want you to print this document. Hey, do my math on this spreadsheet. We tell the computer what to do. But if we told the computer every time the user presses Control P on their keyboard, I want you to give them a blue screen. I want you to lock up. I want you to shut down. That's what the computer is going to do. It becomes a pattern because that was what it was told. But the computer is not going to go, oh, I'm such a loser. No, it's not. It's going to say, hey, you made me this way. You programmed me. Not my fault. Imagine if we could all do that. I know that's a pie in the sky comment to make. Like, let's all do that. But it's true. We are born into the world with pretty much nothing going on. We have the basics. We know how to cry and how to be hungry. And the only way we get our needs met is by crying or trying to get somebody's attention somehow. But as soon as we start absorbing instruction, absorbing other people's behavior toward us, and trying to figure out how to act in the world and be in the world, that's when it's kind of a crapshoot, because there's a computer term called garbage in, garbage out. When you put garbage into the computer, you're going to get garbage out of it. You're going to get blue screens. You're going to get the lockouts. I don't know if Macs have blue screens, but you're going to get the shutdowns. It's going to happen, but it's not the computer's fault. Just like it's not your fault. If someone put instructions in there, like a computer, you're just doing what you were told to do. And I know I'm skirting on the idea of it's not your responsibility. It's not that at all. What I'm saying is it's your responsibility today to deal with it. But it wasn't your responsibility then. You can't have responsibility when you're still learning what responsibility means. The ability to respond. Okay, when do you learn that? When do you learn about self-care and self-compassion and self-worth? You don't learn about that stuff until later in life. All you're doing as a kid is soaking it all in, getting all those instructions for how you're supposed to live your life. And as a kid, those instructions get hard-coded into your memory, and they become the way you live. And then it takes a lot of healing, like a virus scan, to eradicate some old programming so that you don't shut down, so that you don't lock up, so that you don't behave erratically or traumatically or with a lack of self-love or self-care. But it can be hard if you don't know how to do that. It can be hard to self-eradicate old programming. It's like the computer working on itself. You know, you can have an antivirus program running that is continually updating your computer so it doesn't get viruses, continuing to protect it. How about boundaries? I look at boundaries like that. You set up boundaries in your life so that you tell people and the world what you will and won't accept for behavior. And when those boundaries are continually enforced, you keep the emotional viruses out. So I'm sorry if this doesn't relate to everyone that doesn't use a computer, but if you think about it in these terms, that people in our past may have accidentally or intentionally put these emotional viruses in us, now we have to eradicate them. Well, this is the kind of stuff that we're working on this show, and other people talk about this too, trying to help you heal old trauma, past neglect, past abuse, past people telling you that you're not worthy, that you're not lovable, all of these emotional viruses that are not healthy and also not true. I mean, the abuse and neglect and all that stuff is true, but how you feel about yourself is not true if it's negative, because you weren't born that way. It was injected into you. It was a forced belief system. And so practically we can look at that and say, you know what? That's not how I was born. And I don't want to think badly of myself anymore because I'm pretty darn awesome. And yes, you might have to inflate your ego a little bit just to reach a point where your ego's healthy. Because if your ego has been deflated all this time, it's time to work on it and say, I'm awesome or pretty darn awesome. I'm really a good catch. I'm pretty darn smart. Work on the ego. And then you'll get to a point where, all right, I've had enough. I don't want to overinflate this, but you know what? Maybe a little. Sometimes. Why not? All I want you to remember is that anything negative that you think about yourself, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, there must be something wrong with me, is the falsification of reality from someone else who is incapable of seeing the real you. And if you got to work on that, that's okay. That's what this show is about. Listen to all the years of all the episodes I created and continue listening. And as always, keep an open mind so that you can step into your power. That will help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.